In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, the podcast where we debate whether top-rated movies should be top-rated. I'm Vidur.
And I'm Vikram.
Hi, Vikram.
Hey, man.
Where's that from? Is that Korg from Thor Ragnarok?
Hey, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I don't know what I was doing earlier.
Well, why don't you just talk in your normal voice and tell the good folk, our pleasant listeners, what we're doing here today.
Surely, man, surely. So we take a movie from the IMDb Top 250, we toss a coin, heads argues for and tails argues against.
And the movie we're feuding this week is a Quentin Tarantino, One Day Will Be Considered a Classic.
Will all his movies be considered classics, you think?
That's my point, yeah. Except for maybe Once Upon a Time in America, the one he's pushing to be a classic, the ninth movie from Quentin Tarantino.
I don't know about Hateful Eight either, but we'll get into that, I guess, at some point.
I think we will. Why don't we focus on the movie we're feuding this week, which is Django Unchained.
Django Unchained.
Django.
When was the last time you saw it, brother?
Django. I don't know if that's the tune. I know there's a song like that in the midst of it.
I think so too, yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in a while because I just find it a very consuming watch.
Very graphic, right? That's what I remember from it.
Yeah, it's like a super calculator graphic. That way.
What? I did not get that. Went over my head. But I feel like I saw it. I remember
you never use a graphic calculator like in engineering?
Scientific calculator?
Oh, is that what they call it in India?
Yeah.
I think it's called a graphic calculator there because you can make graphs in it, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, genius.
I don't even know how to make graphs in those. I don't even know how to use those.
I know people used to use those calculators to cheat because you're allowed to bring a calculator. But if you're like a coder, you can like bring in notes in your calculator.
Where were you during my engineering days?
I know, right?
Yeah. Can we get back to the movie?
Yeah, we can. We may.
Thank you.
So Django Unchained, I haven't seen it in a while. When was the last time you watched it?
Same, man. I think I remember going out to see it in the hall when it came out and maybe once after that at some point, but it's been a pretty long time since I saw it. So I'm kind of stoked.
Why don't you toss the coin, Vikram?
Gladly, man. Again, heads argues for, tails argues against. Here we go. And I got tails.
Ha-ha.
There's no ha-ha here.
A classic in the making, remember?
Whatever, dude. You can't just call every Tarantino movie a classic. I highly dispute that.
I haven't seen every Tarantino movie.
You haven't?
I haven't watched Death Proof.
I've seen Death Proof. Is that a Tarantino movie?
I haven't watched that other one with the female lead.
Jackie Brown. Yeah. It's okay. I feel like there are some movies that cannot be classics.
And yet there are others like Django Unchained that are going to be classics.
Of course.
I'm excited to watch this movie again. I think being for a Quentin Tarantino movie is always a win. So why don't we get into it? Let's go watch the movie.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'm excited. What's up with the music in this movie?
Django.
What is up with that?
Django!
It's like, it's so weird and stupid. And they kind of use like the Django song as segue between scenes. And it's like they have a song for every character. For example, even when Christoph Waltz's character is introduced, he's like, his name is King. Oh, he's a dentist. Bum, bum, bum. They just keep going on and on. I felt like whenever they would introduce a new song, a new character, they'd have a new song for it.
Basically, Quentin had to wait one more movie before he could get the all-time great Ennio Morricone to work with him and score his movies. So till then, it's Quentin. He just had to ape the best cinema he's watched, which in this case was Spaghetti Westerns. And he just put together like a bunch of music. It's fun. It's just meant to be fun.
Spaghetti Westerns would have like themes. They'd have instrumentals. They wouldn't have like songs about characters. And I feel like every time, like, for example, when they started talking about Broomshaft or whatever his wife's name is, they just come up with a new song for her. Oh, this is Broom Time. Wait. It's Broomhilda time. It's so stupid. And then when they start using it as segue between scenes, that's when I feel like it's like overused as hell.
I'm still not over Broomshaft. Broomhilda.
Broomhilda. Is that even a German name?
Yeah, of course. It must be. Listen, like I said, Ennio Morricone came with him on Hateful Eight. Mm-hmm. Until then, he just made the most of these other, like, tribute to spaghetti western soundtracks. And the thing to take away from it is that this whole movie is essentially a tribute to spaghetti westerns, right? Firstly, I don't know if you know this, it's like a tribute to Django the movie, one of the most popular spaghetti westerns from the 60s, and it starred this guy called Franco Nero, who's actually in the movie. You know the scene in the bar when Django gets a drink and then that guy says, what's your name, Django? He says the D sign.
Oh, yeah.
That guy Franco Nero played Django,
the bartender.
No, the patron standing next to Jamie Foxx. And that guy, his movie was so successful, the original one, that people are still chasing him for sequels to Django. Like, he made a couple of official ones. There were like tens of unofficial ones. And he might do another Django movie still in this era, in this modern era.
Wait, and the story was the same? Like,
No, it wasn't the same, but he was just a cowboy. So he's white, by the way. So the story is obviously
that was the next
not
question.
The same.
Yeah.
There was a movie called Boss Beep, and by beep I mean the n-word, and I'm sure we'll have an n-word discussion down the road, but it was called Boss N-word, and that was just like a black bounty hunter cowboy, or maybe a pair of cowboys. So this movie's sort of like a mashup of the two.
I don't know. I'm curious to go see this old Django movie if it has any resemblance to it. I'm pretty sure it won't, because this movie, even though he calls it a spaghetti western, even though he calls it like his way of dealing with racism and slavery and all, it just, he doesn't.
It's a black cowboy. It's a Boss Beep.
Is it though?
That's the whole point of the movie.
All right, can we talk about the Boss Beep, as in the actor, the Boss Beep?
Who's Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx, yes.
Killed it? What? What more could he have done? Like, clueless slave, he still had like a lot of like ego as a slave, which Jamie Foxx has, I think, which he brought to the role.
I think Jamie Foxx just played himself. I don't think he can act, firstly.
Jamie Foxx is not a slave turned bounty hunter. So by definition, he did not play himself.
I meant his acting characteristics and his personality. I thought it was just Jamie Foxx. I don't think he can act, firstly. I don't think he's a good actor. I don't know how he pulled off
Ray
Charles.
Oh, you know, the best actor winner for Ray Charles.
Yeah, I don't know how he pulled that one off. Because other than that, if you notice all his movies, he's just the same person.
What about Electro and Spider-Man? That was really varied.
Was it good varied or no. Bad? It was horrible varied. So whenever he does try to be varied...
Jamie Foxx can act. Collateral, that's it. Answer to all questions.
I don't think so, dude. I don't think so. Okay, have you seen Horrible Bosses?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, so he plays this character by
called
the name...
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker Jones.
Motherfucker Jones.
Yeah, so whenever someone's like, hi, motherfucker, he's like, I ain't no motherfucker. That's his response to everything. But then it's just that same tone. And that's... He's playing Motherfucker Jones in this movie. He plays motherfucker.
Can you start swearing, firstly?
That's his name. I'm not swearing for this heck of swearing. That's his name in the movie. But he's playing that character in every movie. He's like, I like to see you die. That's him from this movie. He could have said that in Horrible
Bosses. That movie
came
after Django, firstly.
Great. Then it's one of those Brad Pitt.
So motherfucker Jones is playing a version of Django. And that's great because Django became Jamie Foxx's defining role.
I think you're confusing yourself. Horrible Bosses came out after Django.
Didn't it?
It doesn't matter. He's playing the same person. That's my problem with Jamie Foxx. I don't think he can act at all.
It's a great person. What's wrong with that? Okay, maybe he can't act and maybe this is the limit of his range. Who cares?
There is no range. It's the main character of the movie, right? And he's driving the movie forward. If his portrayal of an urban hoodlum and a slave from 150 years ago is the same, then what point is there to be a good actor or a bad actor?
Vikram, you just use the word hoodlum, bro. Like, can we just step out of everything for a moment and calm down? Stop talking about Horrible Bosses and other random meaningless comedy movies.
He's so bad. I don't get it. It's like...
He's a black cowboy. He's a slave who Christoph Waltz, Hans Lander 2.0...
Oh, God.
Teaches
I've
him.
About that.
I'm sure you do. But Hans Lander 2.0 is the biggest compliment you can give someone. And Christoph Waltz is the guy playing him, so makes sense. Teaches him how to be a bounty hunter. He has a natural talent for it. And hilarity and violence ensues. That's the movie. That's the pitch. What's wrong with that? And I haven't even mentioned DiCaprio, bro. I mean, come on. And then a random DiCaprio. DiCaprio playing a supporting character?
Yeah.
That's a winning movie right there.
Well, not really, because if your main characters are so flawed, so for example, we've already spoken about Jamie Foxx. I want to talk about Christoph Waltz. I feel like Christoph Waltz has no depth. We already saw, it was so refreshing to see. I think he did a tremendous job as Hans Landa. It was so much fun to watch. And then when I saw this movie, it was fine. It was still fresh enough. But then this rewatch was painful, dude. I can't watch him enunciate his lips off anymore. I can't do it.
Enunciate his lips off.
He's just slowly enunciating and talking the entire time. That's old. It's old. There's a reason why we don't see him anymore.
It's a style, firstly. We see him. We just don't see him in like crazy Quentin Tarantino roles, right? But he does like random stuff. He did Alita. I watched Alita.
You know, when I saw him last, Horrible Bosses 2 with Motherfucker Jones. That's the reason he's in like the Green Hornet and Horrible Bosses 2.
I haven't seen Horrible Bosses 2. I want to see the reunion of Django.
There's no reunion there. They don't even talk, I guess, because they're like two different characters. He plays the antagonist. But there's a reason he doesn't do good movie roles, because he has that one style of acting.
Inglourious Basterds was sort of his introduction to Hollywood, because Quentin found him. And he found him through such fortune because they needed someone who was that multilingual. Right. And the character of Hans Landa came from there. His character here, dentist turned bounty hunter, also just happens to be like a fun-loving, highly skilled fellow who happens to live in the Wild West. So he's just like kind of having fun with it. It's not exactly Hans Landa. He's not menacing, for instance. He's actually just skilled.
Isn't his delivery exactly the same? That's what it reminds you of. It's not like Hans Landa was menacing because of his dialogues.
This character reminded you of, ooh, that's a bingo.
He could have just as easily said that and it would have like fit in this narrative. But it's his delivery. It's his style of delivery that's the same. It's the dialogues in Inglourious that made Hans Landa menacing.
You know what it's like? It's like Nawazuddin Siddiqui in Gangs of Wazipur versus Sacred Games. I agree with you.
He's playing two characters from two different states. So his delivery changes as well.
Doesn't matter.
He becomes a Marathi in one and he becomes a Bihari Jharkhandi
in one. That's all superfluous,
right? This guy's just doing a German dude.
No, that's all superfluous, right? My point is like the spirit of the character can be the same. Ganesh Gaitonde and Faisal Khan. They're both like just kind of badass gangsters raised from the streets and nothing.
But my argument against Christoph Waltz is his dialogue delivery. And Nawazuddin Siddiqui's dialogue delivery changes.
Ooh, that's a Django.
He could have just as easily said that. It would have fit.
No, it was way more aggressive and Inglourious. And let's just judge the movie by itself. Oh, Jamie Foxx can't act in general. This is only acting range. Oh, Christoph Waltz can't act. This is only acting range.
The two main characters, the two lead actors.
So they've harnessed, or Quentin Tarantino has harnessed, the exact acting ranges, cast them perfectly, and probably written a script around them.
He had no choice. He gave them a script. They only know how to act one way and they delivered. That's all he did.
It's not like he didn't have any choice.
It's not like Quentin Tarantino is, listen, you act exactly like Hans Landa. Christoph Waltz probably like, bro, I don't know how to do anything else. That's what I'm going to do.
Firstly, Will Smith almost played Django.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. Then he turned it down because of all the N-word, his like image and stuff. Also, he's like, oh, if I played him, then it would be about me and it's only a supporting, some BS. Like he turned down The Matrix, right? So he's now famous for like turning down roles that were much better than the roles he does.
It's not like his character, his acting career was off the charts during this time. How can he turn down Tarantino?
His acting career was off the charts during this time.
During Django?
Yeah, I mean like late 2000s, he was sort of just the biggest star ever.
I thought that was like late 90s and early 2000s. I thought during the Django time, he wasn't as big as he was.
I don't think it's ever died out, his flame. No? I mean now.
I mean, he did that Netflix movie. Have you seen that?
Oh, Bright. I actually did watch it. That's great. It was horrible.
Great stuff.
Vikram, stop derailing. This is what happens when you
are against Will Smith up. It's your fault.
You don't have any points.
I have a lot of points, man. What do you want to talk about next? You want to talk about Tarantino?
Yes, he's only getting better with age. He's like a fine wine of a filmmaker.
Please, he peaked at Bastards. He should have stopped then. I don't know why he's chugging along.
You don't like Hateful Eight either?
I think Hateful Eight is his most forgettable movie. The only good thing about Hateful Eight is the tension-building aspect of it. But other than that, the movie makes no sense. This is marginally better, but I feel like I haven't seen Once Upon a Time yet. I'm a little afraid to go watch it because I feel like I'm going to get let down.
Listen, man, Quentin Tarantino is just a filmmaker who adds his own mix to his like love for movies. Okay. He plagiarizes movies, adds his own mix. So like, for instance, like Kill Bill, Revenge of the Dish, Best Served Cold is literally the title of another movie. But I think it's like Vengeance is a Dish, Best Served Cold. I just summarized Django as his like revenge is a dish best served bloody in the old time West. The way he's like killing people, that's like his own flair. That's something you haven't seen before, right? The way people like go aggressively back when shot. That was just something new. Okay, so anything new to cinema that Quentin Tarantino contributes, I mean, how can we complain? Had you seen someone die the way he kills people in Django?
Yeah, I guess in his other movies, maybe.
No.
In Pulp, weren't people dying similarly? And in Glorious Bastards, like people getting their head knocked off with a baseball bat?
No, that was different, yeah. That was a new way of killing people, scalping Germans. Yeah. This was like people getting blown away. Let's focus on like what he's brought to the table here, man. A black cowboy, a movie full of the N-word.
Too much.
Took balls.
Too much.
Okay. Making Jamie Foxx, reviving Jamie Foxx's career.
Reviving.
And was it dying ever? Jonah Hill as one of the first KKK members.
Jesus, that scene was not needed.
And just a fun spaghetti western. You know what they used to call spaghetti westerns in Japan, by the way? Random trivia.
What?
Macaroni westerns. Which I think is a way more fun phrase for it.
I don't even know what spaghetti western is supposed to mean.
Spaghetti western is...
why spaghetti, the word spaghetti?
Because they were made in Italy by Italian directors. Yeah. It was actually kind of derogatory, but it just kind of stuck.
Okay. My dad loves them, by the way.
You don't love them in general? I mean, trilogy?
No, they're okay. I mean, I love them because of my dad. I've just seen them so many times. My dad saw Django and he wasn't impressed.
Yeah, if you love like the traditional 60s one, this is sort of like, maybe your dad's a racist.
Maybe my dad's a racist, yeah, because he didn't like this movie.
In 20 years, when the
this
genre...
This movie's not going to age well, by the way.
Why not?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I just feel like it went way too overboard. And like in 10 years, like people are just going to start looking at Tarantino as a racist. I know he probably isn't. And this is not what he intended. But that's just how that's just the direction the world's going in.
Let's just talk about that. Like the use of the N-word.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? Spike Lee just lost his shit. He's like, oh my God, like my ancestors came from Africa. Yes, they did. And hence I won't support the movie. Huh? What?
Listen, all of that is different because it's not like Tarantino hasn't used it. He used the N-word himself as a character in Pulp Fiction. Apparently, Samuel Jackson gave him the pass there. But the over-reliance on it, the over-reliance on the shock value of using the N-word is that's what people have a problem with.
I actually think that his use of the N-word is like his use of violence. Okay, he relies on it, yes, for shock value because he's uniquely suited as a mainstream filmmaker to insert that stuff into mainstream movies. But then when you see it enough, like in Kill Bill, when you see the violence enough, you almost get accustomed to it. It becomes like the new normal. And therein lies like the commentary, right? Like when violence becomes normal, he has now painted a world that is so violent that that level of violence is normal. And then when the usage of N-word is so rampant, which it probably was at the time, that's just what they referred to their slaves as. And hence you realize you're starting to live in a world where it doesn't even affect you anymore. And maybe that makes you think. Huh? You like that little piece of social commentary?
No, because the only thing I disagree with is if you overuse something, for example, violence in Kill Bill, maybe you get accustomed to it. It's not necessary that you have to get accustomed to it. This just ramming just N-words and cuss words in your face constantly as much as possible and then some more doesn't mean that someone or a viewer has to get reliant on it. And that doesn't mean it becomes acceptable.
Vikram, why are you pretending to be all like offended? Let's face it.
I'm not offended. I just feel like this movie is over-reliant on cuss words and the N-word and that one scene with DiCaprio where he cuts his hand off. And that scene is over-reliant on cuss words and the N-word. And that's all pretty much what the movie is.
Who cuts whose hand off?
DiCaprio, like that. Remember that scene in which he ends up cutting his hand off? That's some movie trivia. So that one scene.
He doesn't cut his hand off. He cuts his finger. Firstly.
Yeah, sorry. Obviously, he doesn't cut his hand off. That's not what I meant.
That's Game of Thrones you're thinking of. Firstly, okay, why don't we move on from the N-word discussion? Because, you know, I want to have a political career at some point. And I don't think this podcast...
Do you?
Will.
that's way beyond you now, bro.
Yeah, I know. This podcast has ended that pretty much, even without Django. But the scene you're talking about where he cuts his hand, I mean... DiCaprio, let's move on to Caprio. DiCaprio nobody calls him Caprio. DiCaprio. Caprio? The scene where he cut his hand is so fascinating because apparently like that wasn't part of the script or anything.
Yeah.
And he just did it while acting in that gruesome scene where he's doing the typical white plantation owner, look, I'm into science and look at the skull of a black person.
And here are some N-words.
Yeah, and here are some N-words, I guess. And then he cuts his hand and then he rubs it all over Kerry Washington's face.
Yeah.
And apparently that wasn't part of the script at all. And nope. She was kind of horrified.
Everyone was. Even, I don't remember who it was. I was listening to some interview and the part where he basically bangs his hand on the table and that's how it gets cut. And it starts bleeding, but he just kept going with the take. He didn't stop at all. And apparently, Quentin Tarantino, who's always behind the camera, notorious for being behind the camera, just looked outside of the camera, started looking at DiCaprio with this super confused face in terms of, should I cut it? Should I keep going? And then everyone just saw DiCaprio just keep going. And they're like, okay, let's do it.
And delivered a great scene. And everybody in the crew clapped after that scene, by the way.
I mean,
because it was such a crazy performance.
That makes sense. Because it was this very monologuish scene. And then obviously going through that in the middle of your scene, I mean, he felt actual pain. So it's commendable. Yeah. But then just, again, over-reliance on cuss words and N-words.
We've only moved past that. I want my political career. But that scene is also like a masterful scene in tension building, right? Like you have no idea what's going to happen next. They've actually been found. And then Tarantino obviously knows exactly where the audience's tension is at. And he lets that tension subside when the deal actually goes through. And then it's a character moment when Hans Lander 2.0 can't let it go. He has to kill Calvin Candy on principle alone for what he's been doing. He just wants to get rid of this person.
Well, yeah, and then, you know what I have a problem with again is this middle third of the movie where they're trying to show this relationship establishment between Christoph Waltz and Jamie Foxx, which essentially gives you this background of why Christoph Waltz finally ends up killing Candy. It's because of how he feels about Django Freeman as a person and his struggle to find his wife. But then don't you think that entire middle third could have been achieved in like 5 minutes?
Well, if you wanted a montage to just cover, you know, the training montage, then you should go watch Rocky instead. That's not Quentin Tarantino's style.
I think that was too stretched. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a montage. It could just be like two or three scenes of their relationship building.
But yeah,
instead
yeah.
It became
and
like
then
a
Django
third of the
climbs
movie.
Up the steps of Philadelphia and raises his hands.
Oh, Django! Dude, the music, man. Do you think Quentin Tarantino had a song about himself when he came in the movie?
Which one?
Oh, this is Quentin. It's my 9th, 8th movie.
Okay, which I will grant you my only concession for this movie is Quentin Tarantino in the movie.
He can't help himself, man.
It's like M. Night Shyamalan, except he gives himself bigger roles. And this time he was doing an Aussie accent.
I don't get it.
Also, the shape of Quentin Tarantino as a human is just not movie friendly.
It's super funny. I ended up rewatching Pulp Fiction recently. He's in that movie as well.
Yeah, he's the guy who's house they go to.
Because they end up accidentally shooting someone in the car. Great scene because it's Harvey Keitel and then all of that. But I don't understand how he decides which movie he's going to be in. I don't get it. I don't get the decision-making there. I'm so glad he wasn't in Inglourious Basterds.
I am too. Although his hands were.
Okay, I mean, that's fine.
His hands are the ones that are choking Diane Kruger.
Yeah, but then technically it's supposed to be Brad Pitt.
No, but, Hans Lander.
Oh, in the Hans Lander scene. I thought when Brad Pitt was trying to interrogate Diane Kruger. Oh, that's pretty interesting. But why is he in this movie, man?
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Because it's fun. Don't take it seriously. It's a fun romp.
Fun for him.
I already conceded. He is ridiculous in the movie. I, in fact, didn't even like Anthony Russo in Endgame. Because, like, we live in a different era. I know who this person is.
Exactly.
And, like, it's not like he's a great actor who's going to, you know, cover up the fact that I know who this person is by playing a character or by reinforcing the name of that character. Oh, this is Django. This is whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it sucks. It sucks to see him in the movie.
Is he in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No, he's not, thankfully. But listen, man, it's just fun. And what happens with that sequence is also so stupid. It's such a like fantasy wish fulfillment because like all is lost. Django is lost and also like naked. And we have to look at Jamie Foxx's dick for some reason. And then somehow he just figures his way out. So it's almost like Quentin Tarantino is like his presence just alerts you to the fact that this isn't real. This is stupid. Let's just make the heat.
We didn't feel that before throughout the movie that this shit
once
isn't
in a
real.
While. And they shoot people and they go flying like 20 feet, but then you get used to it. And
this
that's
movie
fun.
Constantly reminds you that this isn't real.
Sometimes that's the point of movies.
Sure,
Rohit,
I get it.
Rohit Shetty movies have flying cars. Vikram cars don't fly.
Wait. You comparing this to Rohit Shetty?
What's wrong with that?
It exactly tells you how good or bad this movie is. I feel like Rohit Shetty movies are shit.
No, not Rohit Shetty movies, but on principle, like the suspension of disbelief is actually sometimes an important part of enjoying a movie.
Oh, really? Shut up, Vidur.
All this to justify Quentin being in the movie, which I've already conceded to you, but still.
You know what my other problem with Quentin Tarantino, or not my problem with Quentin Tarantino, but his treatment of this movie.
I actually have a theory. I think Quentin Tarantino has become better as a director with every movie. And worse as an actor. And that's great.
Quentin Tarantino was never good as an actor. There's no better or worse about it.
But he's become worse for sure.
He sucks. And he's definitely not becoming better as a movie director. What are you saying? Are you saying that this movie is worse off than Bastards and Hateful Eight is better than this movie?
More confident, more poised, more fun, more out there. Like Pulp Fiction is...
I think the drugs are getting to him, dude.
What drugs?
He goes on some benders when he goes into his writing spree.
Bro, these are some hefty allegations, huh? You better back them up.
He admits them. I don't need to back them
up. Oh, he does?
Yeah,
okay.
He admits. He's like, literally, I come out of 2.5 months of these cocaine binges and boom, I have a script ready. And it shows, bro.
That's what Hemingway used to do. That's what Hunter Thompson used to do.
And all those guys started eroding away in terms of like what's up there in the mind space by the end of their careers. And it's showing. I just want this guy to get done with this 10th movie and move on, man. That's it. You know, so I was talking about Bastards earlier. The way he handled, this mishmash of history and violence and comedy, he constantly towing the line of being offensive and then coming back. Because that's also dealing with a very touchy historical subject, Nazis and Hitler and stuff like that. But he still managed to pull that off in this weird, believable, funny, outrageous Tarantino way. And he tried to apply that same thing to slavery.
Wait, say those adjectives again.
What? I've forgotten already.
Believable. No. Weird, funny, outrageous.
Yeah.
Perfect, bro.
Perfect.
That's
and
movie.
Then he tried to apply
That's
this to
movie.
No, he tried to apply it to slavery and he completely missed it, dude. He completely missed it. Because again,
it's not meant to be applied to slavery, by the way. It's just a story. It might as well be called Once Upon a Time in Candyland.
I disagree. Have you seen his interviews post this movie? He's like, I actively tried to broach the subject of slavery in a way that I handle subjects in general. So he tried to do the same thing with Nazism and Hitler, and he tried to do it with slavery. But then you see such a stark difference between those two movies, don't you?
Yeah, but why? Why should this movie be compared to Bastards, right? Like his handling of slavery, even if he said that that's what he's going for, he did handle a lot of slavery in the sense that, I mean, just the brutal treatment in Candyland of slaves is probably not that far off from what it was like. The separation of slave families and slave spouses, very common. The way they tortured them by keeping them in the heat. I mean, it's kind of sad just thinking about it. But he actually made all that watchable, right? What would you rather watch? I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave. And there's a reason for it. It's because it's so depressing that I can't get myself to watch it. But I saw Django. And at some level, I've actually absorbed the atrocities that Quentin has represented, right? So... Net, it's still a handling of the subject. It's still a sort of showcasing of the subject in his own way.
It is net a handling of the subject, obviously, because he's interfacing with the subject.
What would you rather watch? 12 Years a Slave?
What am I watching
Django
it for? To get a better understanding of slavery? Obviously, I'll watch 12 Years a Slave.
No, this not is... to get a better understanding of slavery. I'm just saying, like, what's a movie you'd rather watch?
Firstly, I'll watch 12 Years a Slave because I've seen both and I know which is the better movie. This movie, I cannot watch again. I'll probably never watch this movie again.
Django.
Oh, Django. And now Dr. King and it's Broomhilda. And now I'm Quentin. And then the movie's over. Shoot, shoot, bang, bang, N-word.
But that's the best part of Quentin, dude. It's a masterful filmmaker making, like, essentially the same movies. You know, like him and Robert Rodriguez in film festivals in the 90s, you can hear them. Have you ever seen this clip, by the way?
Which one?
Quentin is essentially pitching, discussing with his friend Robert Rodriguez, the guy who made Spy Kids and all those other movies. In the 90s, his most famous movie was El Mariachi and Desperado.
Right.
And these guys used to like meet up at film festivals. So there's like video footage. Quentin is telling Robert Rodriguez about Kill Bill. And he's like, and then she just gets out and you can see the sheen on the blade and whoop, she just... takes his head away in a clean slice. Enter this character. She has a mace with a ball at the end. And it's just like a kid having fun. Like he's just playing with his toys and we get to be a part of it. That's what it is. He's still the same kid.
He's still the same kid, except his mind's just derided because of the amount of cocaine he's done, man. So you see all of that. It's the same enthusiasm. It's the same attitude. Except
with cocaine.
Except like I was surprised that Quentin Tarantino did have like a white powdered nose when he was shooting a scene, man. Like he needs to take it easy or he just needs to get this last movie out and move on. You know what? I have a concession which I've been sitting on.
Is it called Django Unchained?
No, it's not. But you'll completely agree with this, man. My concession is Samuel L. Jackson. Do the amount of movie that guy does. Now, that guy should be suffering from what Jamie Foxx suffers with, which is lack of depth, tried everything in the world. But he just still manages to come out with these unique performances, which... I'm flabbergasted, man. I love that guy.
I actually thought like this one didn't even need much work from him. He just needed to ham it up, which he did.
All right, don't take my concession. I take it back. I have zero confessions in this feud.
I take your concession. Fun character. I like the reveal when he figures it all out.
Right.
And then they go to a separate room to talk. Mm-hmm. And he's actually kind of faking it. like his subservience to Calvin Candy, and he's like sort of on equal footing because he's been there so long, probably served his father. And
not
stuff.
Just that, but when he found out and he confronts Broomhilda in the kitchen, even that scene, Kerry Washington just breaking down in terms of, I'm sorry, sir. I don't know how this guy does so many roles with such a...
Too many roles,
yeah. But then he just puts his own unique twang into it, man.
Dude, the best thing I heard about this was, I think, on a roast of Quentin Tarantino. And it was about Sam Jackson. And somebody told Sam Jackson that he does too many roles. He's like, you really got to start saying the N-word more. And the N-word is no.
And that wraps up this week's episode of Film Feud. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Thank you for listening. And now we feud it, and you get to decide who you think won the feud. You can find us on our website, munchamovies.com, or on social media at munchamovies. Vote and let us know who you think won the feud.
Catch you guys next week.
Bye.